Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Hey everyone, I'm really excited today because it is the podcast 4th anniversary. I cannot believe I've been doing this for 4 years now. So thanks to all of you who've listened either to everything or just some of them. I know that sometimes the quality's not been so great and sometimes it's wonderful. So I really appreciate all of you being there. I'm super excited that we're doing this. And to celebrate, I went to my favorite bar in the whole world, which is the Hotsy Totsy in Albany, California, and I was able to get an interview with one of the owners, Michael Valladares. So let's sit down and talk about all the great music they play in that bar and that he used to play himself, and the wonderful cocktails that they make at my favorite neighborhood hang. This is such an East Bay interview. And I say that with much pride because I lived in the East Bay for a good 18 years. So here we go. Let's go to the Hotsy Totsy.
It makes it all official, I guess, so nobody can sue anybody. But I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. And I have to tell you, I'm so excited too, because I've wanted to talk to someone at the Hotsy Totsy, because as I said to you, it's my favorite bar of all time, like forever and ever. It's just the perfect combination of, you know, good cocktails, good vibes. Anybody, it's welcoming to anyone. You know, it's like you can just go there with your friends, you can go there on a date. It's just a perfect home away from home kind of spot. I absolutely love it without being pretentious or anything.
Thank you very much.
A lot of that is what you and your partner did with it when you took it over. So if you don't mind introducing yourself and telling everybody who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Michael Valladares, and I am the co-owner with my girlfriend, Jessica Maria, of the Hotsy Totsy Club in Albany, California. It's a literal shack on a corner in a small town that's been serving booze for over 80 years. And we've had it now for about the past 13. Mm-hmm. And so this is our incarnation of this shack. it's not like we built some kind of amazing, entertainment area. This is an actual shack that we kept all the bones and we just cleaned it up and wanted to maintain and preserve. It's a very, very small towny little kind of mid-century cuteness.
Yeah. You know, I remember going there in the 90s. I used to live right around the corner for almost 10 years. I used to live behind the Mallard.
Okay.
And so I would go there all the time and meet up with friends, and I remember thinking how it was illuminated by beer signs. It was like old guys illuminated by beer signs. You know, it just had that kind of, it was just a dive. It was a perfect little dive. You pretty much got beers and drinks, you know, the gin and tonics, the Jameson and Coke, you know, whatever. And it was great then. And then you guys took it over. So how did that happen? How did it fall to your hands?
So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot into that. The Hachitatsu was one of the first places I ever ordered a drink when I was 15, because you could go in there and they didn't really care at that point. This is in the 80s.
Yeah.
So I could go, you know, give me a 7-7 and they just give you a fruit juice jar filled with Seagram 7. It costs like 2¼. and during that time, again, you know, like I said, growing up in this town, I've seen it in all its different, a lot of different versions. And just before we took it over, it really was mostly Budweiser and Raiders signs, fluorescent lighting in there. They had carpets on the floor, which is like the worst idea.
I know. I've always wondered why anyone would do such a thing.
Just captured every mistake and just sat there, you know, and
just so, the funk of bar carpet, right?
my partner Jessica has been in the industry since she was a kid. Started in restaurants when she was 13, bartending on the East Coast at, I think it was 18, but maybe 21. So she really knows that side of the industry. I was a graphic designer, I was a musician. And we had already previously owned a bar in Thailand, on an island called Koh Lanta, but this was a very different experience. We're catering to holiday makers from mostly Scandinavia, and it's, you know, it's turn and burn kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. When we had the opportunity to purchase this bar, it was our chance to be really quite selfish and really want to do a spot for us, something that we could dig, you know, because at this point we weren't really kids anymore. We weren't as old and fogeyish as we are now, but we love the idea of great cocktails, but we hated this snooty aesthetic of majoritively what you would run into in San Francisco at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
The cool factor is just exhausting. It's just kind of unnecessary. We're not showy people. So we really wanted to design a spot that was neighborhoody, all inclusive, very casual, but really high end quality spirits and, you know, product you couldn't really actually get around there. I mean, for the East Bay, the only people that were really doing proper cocktails at that time was Flora, which was, a restaurant. But they had a very nice, pretty progressive cocktail program. And this is before Oakland became inundated.
And there was Kitties in Emeryville.
What's that?
Kitties in Emeryville.
Kitties was great.
She was kind of first, really. I mean,
yeah, she was doing a lot of that as well. But that was also much more of kind of like a nightclub scene.
Yes.
It was very hip.
Yeah.
And, Flora was a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And both Jessica and I are wildly in love with bar culture. Growing up playing music, I was in bars from the age of 13 and appreciate the standalone bar, the thing that is like, you know, it can also be a venue, but like, it's not a food place. It's not a disco. It's people getting together and kind of communicating and being social. So when we set out to do it, we spent a lot of time thinking about all the aesthetics. Having a design background, you know, I felt the important thing was to almost create things that you don't notice that you're feeling or seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to be a thematic bar. It's to have a bar that you kind of immerse in and you maybe don't really realize why you're feeling, but this is the only place you can feel it. Mm-hmm. And that comes all the way from obviously the color palette and kind of dark woods on the interior. We don't have any white lights in the room. Everything is amber. And it's, again, something you're not supposed to necessarily pick up on, but it's just kind of feel that you can tuck in and kind of just stay there. When it comes to artwork, we curated for a long time trying to basically romanticize the idea of the Hachitatsu's mid-century glory. So, you know, what would in the 40s and 50s, what would people consider was fancy or classy, but clearly wasn't, because it's just a shack, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of.
I think of it as much more than a shack, but yes,
well,
you're right.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have no problem with that. You know? So, you know, we adorned it with like old vintage kind of nudes and scary velvet clowns and hobos and just kind of all that stuff that seemed like it was supposed to be adult and playful, and as through time revealed itself to be really just kind of god-awful tacky. And I love it. I love the kitsch of it. But, you know, we didn't want to, again, like make a theme bar. Mm-hmm. So inside the room, we have one television screen. We got rid of all the TVs and internet jukeboxes and all that mm-hmm. stuff. By the way, the internet jukebox to me is the end.
Oh God.
If I go into a bar and anybody can choose, like, this is not a democracy. Yeah. I'm not going drinking to find out what, you know, Johnny Tech wants to hear because his mom was a big fan of Cher. It doesn't register really to me.
No, I agree with you, because if you're creating an environment, and if you're creating an environment, the music is part of that environment. And if anything goes, then that's the environment, you know? And I'd be a little afraid of that personally.
Well, yeah, it's always a bummer because, I mean, it's basically the curation. The DJ is like it could be anybody. And, you know, I don't mind stepping into people's rooms and I want to hear what they have to say or, you know, how they coordinate a room. But you don't want to mix these people up because they're not working. You know, I don't need to hear AC/DC and then Miley Cyrus. You know? Don't get me wrong. I play yes. AC/DC and I love AC/DC. And I think Miley Cyrus is probably a lovely young lady. But it's just, again, it's kind of, to me, it's like it can be staggering to have things change. So we have a playlist that is about 2,000 songs, and it is from every genre. It's not, I'm saying that you need to stay in a genre, but there's kind of an energy that you need to maintain. And again, this is not about aggression. I mean, for us, we play some hip hop from the 90s, but besides that, everything is from the 80s and before. And that means jazz and punk rock and country and disco and everything. We play a lot of Latin music, a lot of mamba, mm-hmm. and some heavy metal. But the idea is that when one song goes into the other, and they're all crossfaded, goes into the other, it's not a jarring experience. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very possible stylistically. You know, if I'm playing like a Perez Prado, like mambo song that's got a lot of energy, and then you can slide right into a Motorhead song mm-hmm. that kind of matches. It doesn't necessarily have to be as loud or as aggressive, or, you know, but it keeps the tempo up. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you go into a bar and like things just dip, the mood changes, you know, mm-hmm. and that's fine. You know, we have a daytime playlist, which is a lot more laid back, and it's a lot of kind of unknown 50s singles, like regional singles, mm-hmm. And you keep it bouncy and light, but in the night, I think you have to maintain an energy in the room. So that's a really fun thing to work on and to kind of build over this past 13 years is, you know, how does Egyptian Lover work with, you know, you know, Mongo Santa Maria? It does. It absolutely does. And most times people aren't even noticing the change. But we get a lot of Shazamers.
Yeah. Because it's one of my favorite things to go into, or to trick people mm-hmm. in a way from one genre to another. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the shuffle will just do it, but you know what it's like. I mean, you just named a couple right there. It's like these two songs work well together and you wouldn't have thought of it.
Right.
And someone just showed you that, you know, just played that for you.
If mm-hmm. you can play like a Sylvester disco track that's got everybody bumping, and then you slide into a Norteño song mm-hmm. and they're still grooving, although they have no idea that this is, you know, Flaco Jimenez or something. all of a sudden it what happens is it becomes a different kind of celebration of music appreciation. It's not like, oh, right, they play, you know, all my favorite rock and roll songs or all mm-hmm. my favorite funk songs. It's like, no, what we're doing is trying to give you an ambrosia. And also, we're very much sticklers on the majority of the songs that we play, we want you not to know. It's very easy to put together a banging set of, like, you know, mm-hmm. the hits and all that mm-hmm. stuff. And we do play a lot of stuff that culturally is impactful to us, what we grew up on and what it means to us, whether that's, you know, The Clash or Public Enemy or Black mm-hmm. Sabbath. But we also play just a pant load of songs that most people haven't heard. And I've got a long history of being a music nerd and digging and finding tracks that kind of blow my mind. Whether it's, we play a lot of Jamaican reggae, a lot of you know, electronic from the 70s, but songs that people maybe aren't aware of because it's not, you know, in the pantheon, it's not mm-hmm. played mm-hmm. on Sirius XM or whatever.
Well, it hasn't been played to death yet. You know, there's something to be said about the B singles, you know.
I was actually stunned recently. There was a band called the Blendells that did 145 in the 60s. They're Mexican teenagers from LA. And they're doing a cover of a Stevie Wonder song, La La La, right? And I just found this 45, and you know, it's the high school kids. So they probably pressed 1,000, 500, 2,000, I don't know how many. But it's just such a track. It's so like, just gets you right in the gut. And then I've been playing it for 10 years and I just heard it on like some car commercial.
Oh, no, really?
I have no idea who that cat was that dug that song up. Because, you know, it's just one of those weird rarities. We play a lot of 45s, Foxy Girls of Oakland.
Foxy Girls of Oakland. You got to play that. Come on, you're in Oakland. You're a little Roger Collins. When I had my house in North Berkeley, I'm forgetting what Roger Collins' name is now. I know he uh-huh. changed his name. Uh-huh. He actually came over and replaced my dishwasher.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Right? Boy, you get into
something. He's still around. No, he's still around. It took him a while.
There's a little girl in Oakland, something like I never, never seen before.
Like a lot of I find a lot of songs obviously from like 50s and 60s New Orleans mm-hmm. Kind of early rock and roll or mm-hmm. songs that were kind of that weird place between jump and jive and New Orleans funk mm-hmm. And then following these guys' careers and realizing, you know, a lot of these cats that were just amazing, you know, died 30 years ago driving a bus in Detroit, you're like mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've got 10 year records. Your 45s, yeah. And you know, and most of the background, it's like, you know, before the Meters were the Meters, that was the house band, and it's just these crazy tracks,
yeah.
And so my appreciation is finding new old stuff mm-hmm. and sharing that with the people, mm-hmm. and along with that, I said we have one TV, and I'm also kind of quite a curator of like art and trash, you know, like. I consider it like art in the folds of culture, like things that may have that slipped away or were from another nation or never had the money, mm-hmm. But have something to say and that are weird. It's like almost, yep. I almost want you to be disoriented at the Hotsy Potsy, where the seats are really comfortable, right? Mm-hmm. You tuck in, the lights are really low. You get your cocktail and now you're going to hear a bunch of songs and watch some really weird stuff on the TV.
It's always fascinating, whatever is on that TV. I can verify that.
But you're probably not going to see anywhere else or know. So this weird feeling you have of like, I'm listening to this really aggressive, like, you know, psychedelic music from Peru from the 60s. And I'm watching, you know, a dragon get his head cut off by a naked lady. This is a Saturday night. Right?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Go outside and get your tacos and sit down and enjoy.
And enjoy, totally. took my husband there. We were just there a couple of weeks ago, and I had about 36 hours. It was a weekend thing. Mm-hmm. I hadn't been back up to the Bay for a while. My husband's never been up there. So I was like, we're only doing East Bay, because I only lived in the East Bay. I'm like, San Francisco is a whole different beast. Let's not worry about that. Sure. But I'm going to take you to my favorite places, right? There were just a couple, but we ended our night that we had there at the Hotsy Totsy. Mm-hmm. And he was loving the music. He's like, oh, good song. Didn't know what it was, good song. And then I think it was some sort of Naked Ladies in Outer Space that was on the TV.
A lot of those.
Yeah, something like that. And I always like the music, but I'm always mesmerized by the TV. And I'm like, I have to talk to you, because otherwise I'm just going to sit here and watch this movie the whole time because I don't know what's happening, but it doesn't need sound. And that's something I appreciate about that stuff too. The soundtrack is what's going on in the bar.
Exactly. And it does sync up quite beautifully sometimes.
Yes, it does.
These moments where it's like, you know, the right groove of a Sabbath song comes on and there's a burlesque dancer just kicking ass. And it's like, of course that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. The curation of the movies is also quite, it takes a lot, because I have tons of films and lots of bootleg stuff I've been collecting for decades. But it takes one scene in a movie to ruin it.
Yeah.
Because you're not hearing it. So you're not following the storyline. And it's like, you know, a lot of the movies that I like that are exploitation have scenes of distress, because that kind of drama is part of
part of those, yeah,
the genre. And but I've been very mindful to unfortunately not show a lot of films that might have one or two scenes that just come off kind of mean-spirited or too graphic. It's very important for us to maintain this as a playful thing, you know. Yeah. I have been to places that play like really kind of grungy, aggressive films, maybe even pornography. Okay. And it's a different mood, you know?
I know. I have a bar here in Los Angeles, and I went in one night with some friends who are visiting, actually from San Francisco, folks who run Pagan Idol and stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
And we're inside, and my bartender that night was showing Clockwork Orange.
Right. That's a great.
And I was sitting there and I'm like, this movie is so beautiful. I always forget how pretty it is. And I was saying that to my friend. I'm like, that's just so beautiful to look at. And then it's coming right up to a rape scene. And
then here comes the raping.
That's you know what? We should probably not be playing this on a Saturday night in the bar.
It's a total bummer, because that's
turn this off. Let's segue out of this, you know?
And that's a grand example. No. Clockwork Orange. Because I mean, obviously everyone knows that movie, so it's not like a surprise. Yeah. But yeah. You're right. Visually, it's wildly beautiful.
Yeah. There's some gorgeous visuals, but there's so much violence and really distressing violence, as you said. Yeah. Not the right kind of background. No, yeah, totally.
It's a real
downer. We had naked space girls that night. Yeah.
Again, naked. It's like we want to reveal what maybe was supposed to be seductive or titillating as kind of wacky. You know, it's playful. We would we're in no way want to show any discomfort, because I mean, here, this is, it's like going to the movies. It's supposed to be a getaway.
Yeah.
And exactly. The getaway is like, I don't know why these monkeys are dressed as firemen fighting each other. You know, like, this is good time stuff. You know?
So you talked a lot. I mean, obviously, you went in very aware about the kind of mood and style you wanted to create and how music was a big part of that. But you yourself are a musician as well, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So you have that whole aesthetic going for you. So tell me, when did you start playing music?
Oh, okay. So I started in the early 80s, and when I was about 13 or 14 years old, started playing in local bands. This is East Bay, Berkeley, Albany, El Cerrito, this area. Mm-hmm. It was kind of just before the Gilman Street thing. That was like in 87 or 88. So before that, I was in bands with some of the guys from Rancid and a couple of other groups. And we were children playing in and we had, there's a very, very specific East Bay thing that you hear through a lot of punk rock and hip hop and ska. It's like there's something in the air. From being from here, and it's a combination of, like, you know, the salt water and Kallax and burritos, going to Telegraph and like spending all day and coming home with like an AC/DC button.
You know,
like,
you know, I was at Kallax from 91 to 2001.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, so, listen, Kallax is formed us and formed me greatly for decades, you know, still.
And that's the thing when you're saying we were kids, I'm all, I know, because, you know, I remember in 91 when Calyx was still in the basement of that church and we had couches that had just been pulled off the sidewalks. You know, that was like our reception area. and then this, the, you know, down below the basement of the basement, always smelled like pee because these homeless guys would piss alongside this church. Yeah. And I remember during that time that we had like, you know, Billy Joe Armstrong was like 14 years old and sleeping on our couch, you know, cause he missed the last train back over the hill to Arena or wherever his family or his mom was, you know, stuff like that. It was very common. There was that whole, like you said, that Berkeley, that East Bay punk vibe, which was very communal.
Yeah, but the thing is, you're absolutely right. And it has always, and I believe still is cool. I don't know what the kids are up to these days, but but when we were starting, it was before there was really a statement of this is punk rock. We were mostly into like British ska. We were into the Specials and that kind of aggression. We dug more dance aggression power like that. But, you know, I also grew up listening to funk. And so, you know, all of our influences, we didn't have any boundaries because we didn't really care about genres at the time. And then you hear Calyx, this is before it was cool to be punk again, this second wave of punk. Calyx is forcing us to listen to bluegrass, you know? And so we put that in our head. And, you know, we would pick up Ella Fitzgerald records and, and, you know, I, on a whim, bought a accordion at the Ashby flea market. And now... we used to do a kind of a ska version of Scorpions' Rock You Like a Hurricane with me playing accordion on.
Oh my god.
And it was like a mockery.
That sounds incredible though.
We just did the chorus over and over again. Because it's not like we really cared about the song. We just like that idea of like a goofy mashup.
My family is Colombian. Accordions figure into a lot of the music there.
I was approaching it completely without any probably right or guidance, because it wasn't like I fell in love with something specifically. I was just like, oh, this is a fun other way to play an organ. Back then we would just do a lot of weird stuff. And what that kind of amalgamated into was the second wave ska thing, the kind of punk rock thing, the kind of aware punk rock thing, you know, it not just dodo head, like young, you know, Southern California white boy aggression, but like talking about, you know, problems in the streets, you know, we used to write songs about like, you know, the murder of Harvey Milk. And for 14-year-old, that's a little heady.
But you know, honestly, you can't be in the Bay Area and get away from that sort of thing. And, you know, I talk about the style of punk that came from different regions. And whenever I talk about Bay Area punk, I'm like, Bay Area punk is, it's always fun and it's always upbeat, but it's always political in some way.
Yeah, because we were forced to give a shit as kids, you know, and it was, I'm very grateful for it. You know, I mean, like San Francisco had a lot of really, I mean, before that in like 78, 77 did a lot of really cool punk rock. It was really kind of like queer driven and kind of like oddbally. It was before the whole LA thing got really testosterone up, you know. It's like kind of New York was like junkies and runaways and prostitutes just kind of like having a sleepover and seeing what happens. And San Francisco has that. Berkeley is a lot more, we were the sons and daughters of lefty commies. We're educated and pissed off and you know, so it was fun to have an enemy, you know. It was I was blessed with Ronald Reagan, you know.
That's true.
It was a great way to grow up to understand that authority is complete bullshit. You know, this is an act, this is a performance, and when you're young and you feel like, are you forcing me, are you telling me I have to just, you know, do the okey doke on this? It's very inspiring. And so if you throw in, you know, distorted guitar and maybe you know, some merengue.
I like that a lot, you know.
You're done too much, much too young. Now you're married with a kid when you could be having fun with me.
this bubble inside of a bubble from which I come, that I feel safe and comfortable in, is this is, I think this Hatsitatsi thing is quite an extension of that, stylistically, where it is an absolute unintended mashup that is not for you, but is going to be for you. You know, it's like Lemmy said, you know, it's like you have to fly your flag and see these boots. You know?
Well, a friend of mine once put it the same way, like everybody's got a fan club, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, what you look like, your size, your shape, anything like this. There's everybody's got a fan club, you know?
Right. And I smell despair in the room, you know, when I see like you're trying to placate me, you want me to be happy with what you've done. And that doesn't work. I don't think, I believe it's the downfall of, I mean, you know, the Hatsitatsi is a bar. This is what I do, is my business. But it's the same theory of art, where it's like, if you're chasing people to love you, you're lost. And you can't, you have to do what you do. And if people dig it, that's amazing. If they don't, they can go down the street. I want you to be happy too. You're just not going to be happy here. You know, we're very selective. You know, Jessica takes her craft very seriously and has been in this game for a long time. And we don't sell Jägermeister. We don't have shot glasses. We have all these things that dissuade people, mostly young people, from coming in and believing that they're going to take over the house. This is much more like daddy's party. If you're with daddy, you can't. And if you don't, go to the little kid party. I don't care. We just made this place for us. We want to have a quality cocktail, eat a taco, and watch Naked Ladies in Space.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I was going to ask you about the cocktail side of it. And I know it's your partner who deals with, she basically took over the bar program when you guys took over, right? Is my impression. And can you speak on her behalf a little bit, since she isn't here with us today, on what she wanted to bring to the party? Also, I'm just going to say, as a side, I've noticed since you guys took over that it seems to be almost all women back there behind the bar. Yes,
almost. We've had some men bartenders. And they come and go. But I mean, we're very kind of women forward. That was not on accident. Jessica being in the bar game, you know, when she was coming up, I mean, you can be a bartender and you're great. You pour the drinks pretty and all the whole roar. Jessica's been involved in changing the culture of drinking in the San Francisco Bay Area for. Quite some time. Before this, she was the bar manager over at Cesar, which had
amazing. I love Cesar.
Yeah, they have amazing wine selection, and they did a little stuff before that. She was at Fonda. Prior to that, we had our own bar in Thailand, and then before then, we've been together for 23 years, so it's been a minute. She used to be the bar manager at the Warfield and the Fillmore. And then where we met a long ago, she was actually bar manager at Blake's on Telegraph.
Oh, wow. So she's got a deep music history too. She's had to be part of that.
She's an East Coast girl. She's from South, just out of Boston. So starting, I think I'd say about 15, 16 years ago, when she was kind of with a clique of a lot of people that came out of Cesar that got into the word mixology, but that
the craft cocktail kind of game.
Guys that went on to do, well, tons of stuff. Anyway.
they went over to the city and did
exactly.
Stuff. Yeah. So it was all that.
They grew their sideburns out and weird, all these tattoos popped up. but back then, Jessica was like the gal in the boys club. And it was kind of like to be taken seriously, creatively. You had to be on your game. You had to be out there. She was very involved in like early kind of like, you know, Bartenders Guild and all these different things. And so she has always had a reputation to defend, I guess I would say. I'm obviously super proud of her because she's won a lot of different events, and we've had a lot of great write-ups in the Chronicle and all this stuff, and she is actually one of the people, one of the pillars, you know, I'd say about maybe the 20 or 25 that have, you know, made an impact in the San Francisco Bay Area. So her standard is quite high. In like everything looks very casual and feels very casual. Totally isn't. The technique and the ability for consistency, and also being able to train up our staff to have knowledge to be able not only to like make cocktails on the fly, but understand the history and the purpose of all these spirits. We have over 250 bottles behind our bar.
It's a great selection back there. That's how, if someone is a fan of cocktails, they can walk in, but take one look at that bar and realize, oh, it's no joke. They actually, you know, because a bar can offer you two things. It's the environment where you can sit and be comfortable and just enjoy the atmosphere, and it can offer you a good drink, and you don't always get both.
Mm-hmm. and you know, for Jess, you know, we don't shame anybody either. You know, it's like, I mean, behind their backs, we totally.
Of course, not any job.
No, but it's like we get a lot of vodka soda people. And that's fine if that makes you happy, you know. But also, maybe on the second drink, may I suggest, if you like that, we'll go this way. We're like a gateway bar. We're trying to, you know, I've got candy and a van, and I'm going to get you. And, you know, like, you come in and have your Jack and Coke. But maybe let's try something that's in the same ballpark. Let's take the Coke out. Let's maybe try something a little bitter, or, you know, something else to get them kind of excited about what they're getting high off of. You know, we are this is an experience. We're supposed to be appreciating this. So Jessica's standards have always been high. She's about 5 years ago we started working in collaboration, because we do two menus a year. Spring winter, spring, summer, and fall winter. And Jess was responsible for all of it for like the first 7 or 8 years. And now, because we've got such a strong team, she gives people, different bartenders, parameters, and says, you come up with a drink that's, you know, equal parts plus this and know this, and go and do it. And then we get together and we workshop them as a team, all the bartenders together. So it's like a real cool project of, you've got like these six different women who all have, you know, between 5 and 25 years of experience under their belt, not critiquing, but like adjusting. We work together, and we're going to get that drink on.
You need to have the collaborative feedback. You know, it's just like being in a band and writing a song.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, I think, you know, not to in any way sound sexist, but I find it that women tend to collaborate better than men. It's like, there's a lack of ego in the room. It's not about my drink's better than your drink, or I got to show you, or this hierarchy. We are like a team, and everybody wants everybody to win. And you want to big up, you want to be like, I was part of that cocktail. I adjusted it. She was going to do the lemon peel, and it clearly needs a flamed orange peel, you know, whatever those little details are to kind of finish the story out. So we're very proud of our cocktail program. And again, it's like, I like the juxtaposition of really having like a wonderful, it doesn't have to be confusing. It could be a simple, properly made martini, but having that and being in a room that's rowdy and playful and very, very clean and safe, you know, that's the thing. It's like, we have a sleazy aesthetic that we were given from years and years of the Hotsy Totsy Club being considered kind of a stain on a cute little town. It was kind of the place like, don't mention if you see me here for a while, which is absurd, because it's always been Hotsy Totsy. I mean, before us, we're not responsible for that. The Hotsy Totsy has always been a community spot.
It was the local dive bar, you know.
It was the joint where, you know, the rich guy sits next to the poor guy, and they're equal. There's no cliques or attitude or energy there. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter if you are in technology or you know, we've all got something to teach each other, and that's always been kind of the common denominator. So I like the idea of being in that kind of spot and feeling like you might be doing something. I mean, people to this day still, I mean, it's been so long, people to this day still think that we're a strip club.
It's got the best name and a beautiful neon sign, you know.
And we did put in gold foil, we wrote adults only on the window. we're playing up this playfulness here, but you know.
Well, it is. You have to be 21 and over to get in.
Exactly right. It's exactly right.
It's it's my favorite place. It really is. And just when I went back there after not having been there for several years, I'm like, I walked in, I was like, yes, it's still amazing. I can just tell right now. So I wanted to ask you, since you brought up the Hotsy Totsy being the gateway to learning about different cocktails for some folks, what was your gateway cocktail? Do you have one that you remember kind of, I mean, granted, you're fortunate to be blessed with a girlfriend who's been in the biz for a long time. So you
that was a plan. That was
So, you know, she might have taught you a few things here or there, you know, to get that palette going. But there had to have been a turning point for you since you were a musician. But then obviously being a musician and playing in bands, you were probably playing in bars that didn't have the greatest.
No, that didn't even exist in the 80s. You couldn't get a proper cocktail to save your life, but we didn't know. We didn't know, you know, like,
I was a 7 and 7 girl.
I was a 7 and 7 boy.
And you actually, oh my God, spats. I used to go to spats before I was legal drinking age.
Me too.
So any Berkeley kids, that was the place where you went. And I would get a Midori sour and I thought I was so fancy.
There used to be a giant neon sign in Union Square of Midori. And so when I was a kid drinking on the streets, I thought Midori was like,
that's the thing.
It's gotta be amazing. I have no idea.
Yeah, but if you remember, like, when did drinks start getting tastier? When did you have something that was like, oh, okay?
Well, I was. It's like if you're dating a chef.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
It came to you.
You don't get to get away with it at all. and it's. I drank 7-7s specifically because when I was like 8 years old or 7 years old, I saw Saturday Night Fever and John Travolta in the movie, you know, give me 7-7.
Oh yeah, that's what he was drinking.
And I didn't even know what a 7-7, I didn't know what 7-7 meant, but I knew that I could say it with confidence like John Travolta and probably. So that was when I was 13 and 14 going in the club, like, give me 7-7. I have no idea, but that was my drink because.
Yeah, because John Travolta drank it. Therefore,
what more do I need?
And it's still my fallback. If I go into a place and I'm like, oh, this is just a dive bar, I'll have a 7 and 7.
When I'm in a mood,
yeah,
it's kind of like cuddling up with an old teddy bear.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I can see that very much.
So with Jessica, you know, I think I started. With vodka, please don't tell anyone. Okay, tell everyone. Vodka martini, because it was simple and like, hey, I could get a dirty martini and I don't have to taste it. Mm-hmm. You know, this kind of like, this is the thing where I'm like, oh, this looks like a cocktail, but I'm not sure that I like, you know, whatever bullshit vodka was being served.
Yeah.
And
vodka is something to learn about. It gets bar people are just like, oh, no vodka, but there are good vodkas out there.
There are a couple interesting things out there. Yeah. But I'm like a real, I it's like being born into the mafia. I have to be a gin fan or else I have a new place to sleep. So I started, dabbling in just like a simple martini. But, you know, the beautiful thing that I found before we got into all these complicated drinks that are amazing because they work and is that the simplicity of a good cocktail doesn't have to be rocket science. It has to be. You get a specific gin that you appreciate. You get the specific vermouth that you appreciate. And then you get the slight difference in amounts. And then it's, you know, the amount of dilution, how cold you're going to get that. And it's like, I always drink my martinis with a twist because I like a little bit of a citric nose as opposed to salt in my gin. I mean, like, you know, there's all these complexities and, you know, just details that I don't want to cover up. I also tend to have my martinis very dry because, I'll appreciate a 50-50 sometimes. I really want to see what the gin's doing. And we have a gin tower that we've got like 60 different gins we carry. And it's really fun to realize how broad of a simple spirit that is.
Gin is insane. I put it up there with rum, which also has like 2 million variations.
Yeah, rum goes everywhere.
I mean, it really does. And gin does too. You know, gin, there's so much involved in gin because someone's going to lean it a little more. It's going to be more herbal. It's going to be more junipery. It's going to be more citrusy. It's going to be more vegetal. You know, it's like,
since the, you know, the whole kind of like the way they call them, the New West gins, which are like all these American gins, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's not just juniper bit driven and cilantro. It's like you can kind of go all over the place. And I some of them get a little wacky and I'm not really a big fan of that. I still want my gin to be gin, but you know, there are these isms that if you care about what you're drinking, the viscosity, these little things, if it leaves you with a little saline, or if it leaves you, you know, a little not too sweet. And, you know, there's all these different little balances. If you can sit and appreciate that, then this is a place for you, you know, and you can come in sweatpants. You know, you can be in a tuxedo. We don't give a shit. You know? Like, it really is. Like I said, we set out to make our kind of dream bar, which was a place for people a little bit older, mm-hmm. That people that wanted to appreciate and be social. And, you know, it's the Hotsy Totsy just is not a pickup bar.
Yeah.
We're very, very, you know, more than half of our regulars are women, and we intend to keep it that way. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are women that come on their own. A lot of them are young women. And it's like, mm-hmm. the idea is that you're supposed to feel like this is your spot and you don't have to worry about anything. Mm-hmm. There's other bars down the street for that. Mm-hmm. And you can go do that. But here, this is places for adults to have fun, enjoy each other. And I mean, you know, we have had a bunch of people meet at the Hotsy and get married.
Yeah. I met my husband at a bar, so. Yeah.
We've had a couple get married at the Hotsy Totsy.
Oh.
And we've had a few receptions, because it's like, this is the spot. This is where they met, you know?
So, yeah, yeah. It's perfect. But, yeah, well, let people know where they can find the Hotsy Totsy. Like, you got the Instagram thing going. You got all that. Mm-hmm. I think it's just that, right? Just Instagram? It's
on the Facebook page. We have the Facebook mm-hmm. page. And then, it's the Hotsy Totsy Club is located at 601 San Pablo in Albany, California, which is in the East Bay. It's just north of Berkeley. Coming out of the, starting this industry and just having all these friends, you know, that are in San Francisco, they're like, where are you?
Yeah, I know.
Nothing exists.
Whenever you say Albany, they go, New York? And you're like, yeah. there's one in Berkeley. There's one in the East Bay, too.
Yeah, and then, I mean, now obviously Oakland is huge. So now people from San Francisco know Oakland. But
I know.
They think they have to, like, get a knapsack to come visit us or something. It's like, it's right up the road, bro. Yeah. Out of your comfort zone, you know?
Cool. Well, you know, I figured we wrap this up. We've been talking for a little while and I absolutely love it because I love this bar so much. And I'm so happy to have the opportunity to talk to you, but I wanted to ask, I did have another question since you waxed romantic about the martini. Do you have a favorite soundtrack that goes with your martini?
Be honest with you, I like chaos.
Yeah. As spoken as someone who's listened to Calyx their whole life.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's something very, very inspiring about having a nice, perfect, cool martini in front of you and slowly sipping it while the world falls apart. So I would say, I don't know. I like Motorhead, man. I like Motorhead. I like X-ray specs. You know, I want some energy in there because it's almost like I'm floating above it from heaven, looking down at all
with your martini.
That's right. It's a lovely feeling.
Oh my God. Well, don't go away, Michael, but thank you so much for putting that visual in my mind.
Thank you very much.
And doing this interview. I really appreciate it.
So head on over to Hotsy Totsy Club on Instagram if you want to check out what they're up to. They'll let you know if the taco trucker's there or not. It usually is, and the tacos are very good. And thank you to Michael for being my fourth anniversary interview. I was so happy to get to talk to someone from the Hotsy Totsy. And we obviously both share a deep love of all kinds of music, bordering on nerddom, dare I say. Is that even a question, really? So thanks all of you for tuning in and continuing to listen. Tell a friend, let somebody know. We'll keep doing this for another year, maybe, if you like it. So spread the news that this podcast is here, and let's keep on going. The next episode is going to be number 100. Don't know if I'll have anything special for you for that one. You'll just have to tune back in to find out. Thanks, everyone. Happy fourth anniversary to all of us. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search Shebe Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.